Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Yankees, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Here, before we get going here, I just would again like to remind you of some news this morning that would affect people if you're driving in and around Champaign-Urbana. The Illinois Department of Transportation has announced that an accident on I-74 west of Champaign has closed both eastbound and westbound lanes. Eastbound traffic is being detoured at the Prairie View Road, that's exit 174 to U.S. Route 150. The westbound traffic detoured via I-57 southbound to I-72 westbound to Illinois Route 47 north, and they don't know how long it's going to be closed, but they expect that it will be some time. So local traffic is definitely recommended that you seek alternative routes. Now, for more information on this, you can get with the Illinois Department of Transportation, and they're based in Paris. Otherwise, probably just a good thing to avoid I-74 if you can. This is, again, there's been an accident. A tanker truck turned over on I-74 west of Champaign, and they have closed both the eastbound and the westbound lanes. And if we get more information on this later in the day, we'll definitely let you know. This is the first Wednesday of the month, and for some time now, it has been our habit and our tradition to talk about food and cooking on the show, and generally with the same guy, the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. The title is purely honorary, ladies and gentlemen. He's been stopping by here on the program once a month for a long time, and every time around, he picks something that he'd like to talk about. And we've done a lot of different things. We've talked about cooking with different essential ingredients. We've talked about different styles of cooking, cooking from different regions. And sometimes we've done a little bit of cooking troubleshooting. You know, people have called in and said, look, I'm trying to make this, and this is the recipe, and somehow it's just not working. What do you think? I'm doing something wrong? Do you think I should do something different? What would you have to suggest? We have exchanged a lot of recipes and stories about cooking, and we always have a good time. This time around, he said, why don't we talk about corn? And I said, sure. It is, after all, one of those things that so many people look forward to about summer. When you can get sweet corn, if you're lucky, you can pick it out of the field. If not, well, you go down to the farmer's market. You get it as fresh as you can. And one of the great, of course, arguments is how you cook this. We may get into that argument. The idea, I think, is to go a little bit beyond that. I mean, there's certainly nothing wrong with just eating it off the cob, off the ear. But there are different things that you can do with it. So maybe you have a good recipe you'd like to share. You can call in here, talk with us, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. So I understand you have had a good experience with some corn
recently. That's why it was really on the top of my mind. I was in Milwaukee about 2 weeks ago, and at an extraordinarily fine restaurant. I don't know, maybe about 4 stars or so. Extraordinarily fine restaurant. I had a corn flan. Mm-hmm. And I haven't located a recipe for that, but I have found a recipe of something very similar. So what I would do if I were going to make that flan is I would get a recipe for a flan and take out the sweets and the flavors that go in it and put in the corn. The corn had been ground up in Cuisinart so that it was very, very delicate. And then the flan was cooked as a flan would be, which mm-hmm. is cream and eggs and done in a water bath. And so I'm sort of looking. That pleased me very much because I'd never tasted that. I've made corn puddings and scalloped corn, and I love all that sort of stuff. But that was a new one for me, so I thought, ooh, there are things that you can do with corn other than just have corn on the cob, although I'm not demeaning corn on the cob. And it is, well, there, maybe you want to try something else. And I know mm-hmm. that some people can. And then, of course, the variations that exist in cooking corn on the cob are legion. So I know that there's people who got things to say about, well, the way I do it is. So
well, maybe
I'm
we can hear from some of those people, because
yes.
as we were talking before about the fact that in our household, Mrs. Inge cooks the corn, and it's something that I just don't pay that much attention to. She does it, and then it comes to the table, and it's cooked, and, you know, I don't. But then now I have just been looking at a book, actually. This book came out a number of years ago by Betty Fussell, who's written a lot of books about cooking and food in American history and stuff. And this particular one is called Crazy for Corn. Mm. And it does have recipes in there. And in the beginning section, she talks about – she apparently believes in absolute minimal cooking. She says here, first of all, she would suggest to people that you try eating it raw, just so – at the very least so you know what that taste is. Then, as far as she's concerned, it gets tougher the more you cook it, I guess. So what she does is she just dips it in boiling water for 30 seconds. That's all she does to cook it.
That's very rarefied. I kind of agree with that particular point of view, because corn, you know, the whole mystery of vegetables and the garden and eating is a matter of time. I'm talking about something I don't know anything about. Anyway, I know the words. The esters that are in plants begin to they stop as soon as you cut the life force off. They stop, and then as they get older and older, they affect the flavor and the taste of the corn, or of tomatoes, or of other things, and it is that moment that you, if you get it just right. So I think that she's quite right. I'd push it a little bit farther. Go out into the cornfield and eat it raw, you know. So it's as close to that finesse of what the esters do to flavor.
Yeah. Well, and you were talking about how the fact that. Based on some of the stories that people have told you or the people have told us, that in a lot of families it was the dad. Who did the corn, and that he – one of the things that you did was you put the pot on the stove and you got the water boiling so it was ready.
Yes.
And then he would go out if you grew up this way, you know, you would
yep.
go to the field and pick the corn and immediately pick it off the plant, bring it inside, cook it right then and
yes.
have it right then. So,
yes.
So your window between – picking and eating was just as
tight as
you possibly
yes.
could make
yes.
it.
Yes. Well, that is the ideal.
Yeah.
And it can become a ritual to some people. I like that.
Yeah. Well, again, questions are certainly welcome here this morning on the program. 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. And I don't know. Henry, I got no lights flashing on my side. Do you show a caller over there? Oh, okay. Well, we'll get it straightened out here, because we'd like to talk with some people. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. So, as far as you're concerned, if you're going to take the corn and you're going to put it in boiling water, how long would you do that for?
Actually, not very long. I don't think I've ever counted it myself, but I know that. I find that the corn that is not cooked for a long time is pretty tasty.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not – I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 minutes would be all that I would want.
Okay.
That's boiling it in water, and this is crazy, but we always add sugar to the water.
Well, she talks about this too, and actually I think that that at our house – also, some sugar goes in the water. And although I think that some people would say that, particularly now with some of the sweet corn varieties we have that are quite sweet, you don't need to do that. That was something that people used to do in the old days to kind of
yes,
boost the sweetness.
Yes, and then you just don't break the habit.
Yeah.
So they keep doing it, you know. No, that's the way it's done. And then there are so many other things that you do with corn and in cutting it off and making other things with the corn that is cut from the cob. And that tends to be a rarefied situation. A lot of people, I don't think, really know how to cut the corn off of cobs,
mm-hmm.
Because you slice it, you hold it down to the table, and then cut straight down, and you cut as straight as you can. Then you take the knife and turn it backwards, and use the bar edge, and you scrape that, because inside those little cut kernels that you didn't get all the way down to is a lot of, well, they call it milk, mm-hmm. and it is part of the juice and the goody part.
Yeah, and there's good flavor in there.
Yes,
flavor nuance in there. Okay, well, now I think we got our call straight and round. Let's start out and talk with somebody. First of all,
good.
In Belgium, over there by Danville, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Yes.
Hey, you're very right that sweet corn tastes the best when it's brand new. There's no two ways around it.
Nope.
However, I had a great aunt who is now 90-some, and she doesn't do it anymore, but she had an interesting way of fixing corn that you'll find, I think, rather strange.
Yes.
She had a round ring device that was just bigger than the cob, okay? And she just pushed it down over the cob, and it sliced everything
off.
Oh,
yes.
Okay?
I know of that device, yes.
Yeah.
Had two little handles, one on either side.
Exactly.
And you just pushed it down, yes.
And just it took off all of it at one time. Then she'd scrape the milk out. But she didn't keep the milk for what I'm talking about. She would take the corn, fresh as it is, and lay it out on a pan and dry it in the sun.
And I'll bet she came from Pennsylvania.
No, she didn't come from Pennsylvania.
Well, that's a Pennsylvania Dutch trick.
Is that right?
And oh, is it good.
It makes a real nutty strain.
It does something. I don't know what it is, but it does. And it is a way of preserving the corn, because as soon as you've got it dried, and you could put it into a dehydrator, but out in the sun will do it too. Mm-hmm. And the Pennsylvania Dutch folks make corn that way. And I did learn that from my mother. She dried the corn a couple of times because she said, well, you know, I didn't want to waste this or whatever it was. It is a different flavor.
Totally different flavor. And she used it in different things. You know, sometimes she'd make it into like a corn souffle.
Yes.
Or sometimes she'd cook it in other things and soups and everything. It always added a very odd, strange, delicious flavor.
And you had to rehydrate it, though.
Oh, yes.
And that would take a little bit of time, but not too much. It wasn't rehydrated by cooking it. It was rehydrated by putting water in it and letting it sit for a period of time.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Right.
And, well, that is, I consider that the rarest of corn production, because I think that it changes the flavor, and the flavor is changed for just it's wonderful. I just love it.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you told me that.
Thanks for the call.
That's one of my favorite things.
Well,
dried corn.
I think with anything that you dry like that, what happens is that it somehow intensifies.
It intensifies the
flavor.
It does. But in this way, it almost changed the flavor. You'd say, "Yeah, I'm eating corn, but why did it get so good? You know, why is it just? It's awesome."
Yeah. And I can't think we've talked about this before, that you can indeed buy dried corn.
Yes, you can, and from Pennsylvania Dutch companies. They're the ones that make it.
Yeah,
you
can, okay.
So send to Pennsylvania.
Somebody wanted to try it. They should be able to. You don't have to dry your own.
No, but it's not going to hurt you if you do.
Yeah, it might be fun.
And what you do is you pour boiling water over it and let it sit for a period of time until it is, you know, refreshed as best as it can be, and then you cook it in a an iron skillet with a little bit of butter, and you saute it as much as you can. You could and then add lots of pepper, and not too much salt, lots of pepper, and then pour cream over it, and then let all of that just yumbos.
Let's talk with somebody else. Let's go to Downs, line number four, right here. Hello.
Hi. I think I can follow that.
You of all people.
Yes. Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, yes, you can.
Oh, yummy. I don't know what to call this. I call it a corn and zucchini mess. And I just did this one day when I had read about toasting corn in a skillet. And I had
zucchini,
and I just decided to do this. So I'm going to give you the proper recipe here as much as I can.
Yes.
I took 3 ears of corn.
Yes.
And salt and pepper.
Yes, and pea.
I used a little vermouth, but that's optional. Olive oil.
Olive oil, yes.
A half of a large red onion, coarsely chopped.
Red onion.
3 8-9-inch zucchinis cut in 3/8 to half-inch cubes.
Cubed, mm-hmm.
I had both yellow and green, which made it
oh, yes.
Easy, but, you know. 2 big cloves of garlic.
2 garlics.
And a bunch of green onions cut in half-inch lengths.
Oh, uh-huh.
Do exactly what you said with the corn. Cut it off the cob. Put that aside. Then take out the milk and keep it separately.
Oh, put it separately, yes.
Yeah. Heat a heavy skillet, and I use cast iron for this.
Mm-hmm.
And toast the corn in it dry.
Oh, okay. So you're going. So that's the first preparation is the
right.
Corn, yes.
Over high heat. For 3 or 4 minutes until it gets browned and it's tender, and season it with a little salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a coating of brown starches on the bottom of the skillet, and that's where the vermouth came from. I poured a little vermouth in it.
Oh, yes.
And scraped that up and then added the milk.
Now, let's see. Where did we have milk?
The corn milk. I'm sorry.
Oh, the corn milk. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. And then just pour that all out of the skillet.
Mm-hmm.
Clean the skillet.
Mm-hmm.
Heat it again with the olive oil.
Okay, and start all over again.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then saute the onions.
Okay.
Add the zucchini.
And now, oh yeah, the zucchini is cubed.
Right.
Yes, it's cubed.
Right.
Good.
And then finally add the garlic and green onions and saute them for a minute or two. This all depends on how well you like things done.
That would be very fresh, wouldn't it?
And then finally stir the corn mixture back in and heat it until it gets fairly dry, until that milk is in the vermouth.
Oh.
It's kind of, you know, mostly cooked away.
Uh-huh.
But you don't want to get it to the point where you're glazing the skillet again.
Oh, yes. Oh, that sounds great.
And I just did, I thought, okay, I'm going to start with this. So I'll probably put some feta cheese in it, or I'll probably put herbs in it. And I just didn't eat it.
Hmm.
Out of the skillet, I couldn't stop.
And you had to do it all over again.
Right. No, it makes it quite a bit. But it really depends on how good the corn is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
If you don't have good sweet corn.
Well, good sweet fresh corn. That's exactly the whole point.
Right. And it's been hard to find this year.
I haven't been around to find it
yet. Yeah. Well, I'm involved in a I'll do a little plug here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved in a farmer's market in Downs.
Oh, yes.
Wednesday afternoons from 4 to 6, just off the interstate. And our producers have had very little corn, and what they have is not great quality, and some of them planted an acre and none of it came up.
Oh.
So it's been a bad year for corn.
Well, I guess so. I'll look more carefully.
Yeah, and I've had, even from our people people that I really trust, I've had some pretty waxy, tasteless corn.
Well, I was...
So it's just one of those years.
I was trying to think, what can you do to a tasteless corn to add something to it? I mean, you know, I hate to waste the possibility.
No, I've used it, but it just doesn't have that wonderful flavor that I want with corn. So.
Corn and zucchini, and there's no butter in this. It's olive oil.
No butter. It's olive oil, and not that much olive oil.
Yeah.
You don't need very much. And, it's just as fresh and clear as the flavors can be. You know, there are no herbs, no nothing.
Isn't that funny when you cook that way? Because we keep I like deep brown tastes in a lot of my cooking. But sometimes if you can go really right direct to it and not add all these other
right.
things.
Well, you do get some of that because you toast the corn.
Well, that's going to give a little
and it's
little
not
flavor. Yeah,
it's not the same as your dried corn.
No, it's not. It's another additive. Yeah,
it's different than cooking it in liquid.
In just boiling, yes.
Yeah.
It would be different. Oh,
yeah.
Dear. Well, that's good. Thank you very much.
Give it a try.
That's Thanks wonderful.
Go.
Okay.
We'll go on here. Let's talk with someone back here in Urbana, and this would be line number 2. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have, through my travels, I learned a little technique of cooking corn that it makes a very delicious sauce for mild-flavored fishes.
Oh.
Very, very simple. it's what we used to do is we take maybe 3 ears of corn and make our corn milk out of that, and then warm it up slightly just to where it's starting to steam a little, and then strain it over a bunch of basil, fresh basil, and so there you get all the corn solid out, and then you get that delicious, like really fresh basil flavor.
Yes,
without any of the color or without the sauce turning into like a brown mess with the basil oxidizing.
Yes, turning.
So you just get a nice fresh white corn sauce with the basil flavor, and then put that in a Cuisinart or a blender or something, and blend blend in like a stick of unsalted butter, and then just season it. Season with just a touch of salt. You know, different people like different levels of salt, so I guess it's up to the person. But and then that is just an amazing sauce for scallops or any kind of
mild
fish. It's fantastic.
With scallops. Oh, that sounds really... I've never heard of that. A corn and basil.
Yeah, that's something, oddly enough, I picked up in California.
Well... I didn't get that. I was just in California. I didn't get that anywhere.
Oh,
that's good.
Yeah, it's really easy. It's really delicious. Really fresh, and I've been known to just drink it straight by itself. It's that good.
Well, I don't object to that. That's good. Thank you.
Because you're just slightly warming the corn milk up, so
yes.
It's not actually ever really cooked.
Yes, and that way it does not destroy the basil and turn it in, you know, as you say, oxidized and
yeah, and you're just straining over it, so you're not getting any of the basil in there, so it's just you just get the oils and the flavor and the aroma. It's just beautiful.
Oh, that's good. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a
good
day.
Corn sauce with basil.
Well, other folks, if you're listening here, you have a recipe you'd like to recommend or anything else you have to say about corn, cooking corn, you can give us a call. That's our featured ingredient this morning on Focus 580. It's the first Wednesday and has been for a long time. Our great pleasure to talk about cooking and food, exchanging stories and cooking tips and recipes. And our guest is the man we like to call our chef in residence. Doyle Moore is his name. And we've been doing it just forever.
I'll say.
And we're always really pleased to see him here. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Now, Mrs. Inge wanted to know if you had ever had huitlacoche. Have you ever had it?
My experience with that was picking it off the corn in my uncle's field.
Yes.
I know exactly what you mean. And it was like, oh, this is terrible. We've got to get rid of this. And we would go out and pick it off. And then 40 years later, learn that it is one of the extreme tastes. And I don't think – maybe some people don't know what it is.
Well, this is what I imagine you grew up –
Let's talk smut.
Calling it, yes, exactly. Corn smut.
Corn smut.
It's a fungus, and it grows on the corn.
Yes.
And for farmers here in the United States would have considered this to be a bad thing,
oh,
a nuisance. You
want
to get rid of it. But in Mexico, this is a great delicacy.
That's right.
And it's something that now, as more people in the United States have discovered the cooking of Mexico, people there now, actually here in the United States, there are some farmers where some parts of their field they actually cultivate it because it's in demand. From a lot of restaurants and people who do high end cooking are interested in as an exotic ingredient, but it would not have been considered in our day when we were kids, it would not have been considered a good thing, and it would have been something you just want to get rid of.
Awful, get rid of it.
Yeah.
I have not tasted it. I know of it, and I've seen it in the Mexico markets, and it's really quite. Exotic in the markets because they get great big gobs of it, you know, maybe 2-3 inches by 4 or 5 inches. Of course, what I remember is about an inch by an inch and a half on the end of the stalk, on the end of the corn cob. But I was impressed when it became a crop that you grow for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I guess even for marketing purposes in here in the United States, some people have taken to calling them corn mushrooms.
Oh,
and that sounds a little nicer than corn smut.
Smut, exactly.
Or wheat locoches. People say, "Well, what the heck is that?
What is that?"
Okay, all right. Well, I've never had it either. So, I don't know. I guess maybe I would try it if I had.
Maybe that's something we have to look into.
All right, more smut on this program. Let's talk with someone in Urbana. Line number one. Hello.
Hi, I. Going back to cooking corn, just plain, you brought the corn, you bring it home, and you throw it in the boiling water, and I don't put anything else in it. I think good corn should be good corn. But I do think, what I'd like to ask is, what happens to the flavor when the corn turns from being the totally raw color, you know, it is about 30 seconds later, that it turns to a slightly darker shade. Is that a good point at which to think about now? How much tougher do I want this?
Well, I think that it would end up toughening it some more if you cooked it longer, because that's what we're talking about is a lesser amount of time under the heat would not make it quite as tough. Some foods, like chicken breasts, you know, you can cook in a minute and a half, and if you don't cook it in a minute and a half, then you have to cook it for 45 minutes. You know, that vast difference, because it all of a sudden goes through a toughening time. And I think that this is the same thing that happens to the corn, is it does toughen up. I would say that you're very observant to see the change in the color in the corn, and I would also say that probably is a good point to take it out.
And also, this is not corn, but are you familiar, and if you're not, would you like to find out about mioga, the Japanese garlic, for another program?
Is this the flat-leafed green?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I have some, and I haven't really dug it up, but I just like, you know, in some mixed culinary program, maybe you just mention a few things about it.
Well, I think I have some in my backyard as well. I know the Koreans use that a lot. More than the Japanese that I know. I had never seen it in a Japanese market, and I do see it often in a Korean market. And it's those flat green leaves.
And it's about 5 feet, well, 4 feet tall.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what you really do is you sort of steam it and use it as a green.
Oh, you don't dig out the garlic at the bottom?
You only use the leaves. And so when you see it in the stores, it's a bunch that's not more than a foot long, the tops of the leaves, and they're gathered and tied and clipped off. If I've got the right thing in mind that you're describing, and I'm trying to remember what the common name of it is. I think it may be called Asian garlic. It's growing wild in my backyard, and I always like it because it spreads, and I don't care.
Well, but, I have a friend who lived in Japan for a number of years.
Yes?
She said the garlic bulb is actually sold in the springtime.
Huh.
In the markets there.
Oh, well, the bulbs, yes, they could be. A garlic is not too much used in, let me rephrase this. In good, proper Buddhist cooking, you don't use garlic because it is considered unclean. I won't say it poisons the body, but you know, your sweat and all of that take on a garlic odor, and that is very not a good Buddhist trait to have that. So I do know that that's not used in some dishes, or it's not in some dishes, in any dishes that are good Buddhist cooking dishes. So I've never really experienced that too much in Japan.
So you just take the tops of your green leaves?
Yes.
And you saute them?
Boil them just a little bit. Just blanch them.
Okay. Okay.
And then you could leave them long and whole, sort of like a green spaghetti or kind of like a seaweed salad. And that's another way of dealing with it is after you've blanched it for just a little bit, then pour some soy sauce and maybe some mirin wine and what flavor would you put with that? Maybe shiso. And eat it as a cool salad.
Mm, thank you.
That'd be good?
Yeah, great.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
All right, thanks
Bye.
For the call. And so does this actually, does it have a garlicky flavor to
it's
it?
Very good.
So you'd
not
taste it.
It's very garlicky. It's garlicky.
Okay. So you would taste it and you would say, oh, well,
yes,
this is is garlic.
These are garlic leaves.
These are garlic leaves. Yeah, okay. Okay. Other people that want to give us a call, we have plenty of time. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And we're talking about corn. That's the featured thing we're talking about here this morning. And if you have a recipe to share, that would be wonderful, particularly with something that's just that departs from the very simplest way of cooking it. You can roast it, you can boil it, you can eat it right off the cob, and that's great. But there are other things you can do with it. Or if maybe you have something to say about the cooking of the corn on the cob.
There are other ways of cooking corn on the cob. A friend of mine is very keen on peeling the husk off and then covering the cob with a wet paper towel, and it goes into the microwave for 2 minutes.
Hmm.
And so then that again is. All that steaming. I remember how we used to pull it off and soak it in cold ice water and then tie it with a rubber band and then put it on the grill.
On the grill.
And
yeah.
That would be another way. And then, of course, one of my relatives takes the husk off and everything and has the corn right on the grill turning black as they're cooking it.
Yeah.
And that's often done in Mexico on the streets. The corn is being grilled right fresh on it, but this other technique makes it contains all the steam and gets everything in. It's only 2 minutes in the microwave.
Oh, okay, so that's something you can try too.
Yes,
we have someone also calling here from Belgium, not our original Belgium person, but somebody different here on our line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hello.
So there are two guys living in Belgium. How about that?
Yeah, I think there's three and maybe a dog. But, a small dog. Okay. I just kind of tuned in the last 5 minutes. This is about corn, but you were talking about garlic. And this is the first time I've grown garlic. And I have garlic. And I was wondering if I could take the leaves and or like a leaf and use it to cook.
Oh yes, well that's kind of what I was describing was that,
okay.
that particular form of garlic you used only the leaves, but
okay.
You could do that.
Okay. Yeah, I've never really heard of that.
I don't know of it in a recipe either because mostly the recipes involve people going to the market and getting the dried heads.
Right.
And,
yeah.
Maybe there's somebody from Gilroy, California that knows how far you can go into into garlic cooking.
Yeah.
I would think that...
that town's full of experts.
Well, it is indeed. My thought would be to use it pretty much as you use the idea of chopped green onion tops.
Okay.
And you see, but pull back on a little bit because it could get a little bit too heavy for you. But
if I were to cut part of a leaf or a leaf off and dry it in the sun for a few hours.
I don't think that would gain you anything. No, I believe you would like to have the fresh juices rather than the dried out husk. I'd get about three leaves, about a foot long, about three leaves, and they're pretty wide at the bottom, aren't they?
Yes.
Wide, yeah. You might split them. So it's not quite so big a mass of stuff. And then chop them about a quarter of an inch and use them that way as a garnish.
Okay.
That'd work.
That sounds good. Okay. Get back to the corn.
Yes.
This is very interesting. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
Other questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Now we have introduced a new subject here.
That's true.
Garlic greens. Okay. Well, I'm just for grins, I have Epicurious up here on the website, and I put into the recipe search garlic greens, and I'm coming up with recipes that have greens and have garlic, but that they're not the garlic greens.
I think because it is not our tradition to grow our own garlic, therefore it's not available
because you don't get it.
because you don't have it, and then no one is going to crop it. Except, as I say, in the Korean markets where you get the one that we were just talking about. I see it all over town here. So that's a slightly different crop. I just think you have to be inventive and use what you got in your garden.
Yeah.
But I think that's a neat thing to do because it would give a lighter taste. It wouldn't be as heavy as the bulb. And now if you cut a garlic, you release some things that then in the cooking of it make a stronger flavor. If you leave the garlic clove whole and cook it until it's done, it will be very, very mild. That's why Roger Cooper can cook a chicken with 40 cloves of garlic, and he does. And that's the kind that you want to take and smear on a piece of bread because it's so tasty.
Yeah. Well, you end up with roasted.
It's like roasted garlic. And that is the same situation where it's quiet. It's when you've mashed it up and sort of activated some of the parts in there. There is a great difference. And some recipes say be sure you don't cut the garlic too much because you don't want it to get bitter or to flavor it too much, and that garlic will mellow. If you put it in very early and then cook it for a long period of time, it'll mellow and you almost don't even know that some of it's there as a strong garlic flavor.
Okay. Let's talk with someone here in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi there. I tuned in late. I'm not even really sure what the subject is.
Let's make up one.
Well, I had a question. I was thinking I need to ask Doyle about that. I'm trying to recreate an old ice cream recipe that my mom had when I was a kid. We had the card until a little bit ago, but it actually accidentally got thrown away.
Hmm.
I've been looking on the internet, and for a long time I couldn't find anything similar because it has, I'm trying to think of the word, not rattan.
Rennet.
Junket.
Rennet.
Junket.
Junket, yes.
So I found a recipe that's very similar. And I think I know how to change some of the proportions, but one thing that I remember about the recipe as I knew it was that there were, I think, 6 eggs and then 2 eggs that you split. And the recipe that I got off the internet asked for 8 whole eggs. I tried the ones off the internet, and it's very, very close, but I'm thinking, well, I need to split 2 of those eggs to make it my old recipe, but I don't remember whether I'm supposed to put the yolk in or the white. Do you have any clue which makes more sense?
I'm going to guess the yolk because there's more nutrition in the yolk and it's a little oilier. And my guess would be because generally when you're doing some cakes, you often do that. So many eggs and a couple of added yolks. So
you think that makes sense?
The ice cream
a custard.
Yes,
really.
Yes, you're making a custard, and so it would be the quality of the egg yolk that you want to use rather than the white.
All right. Well,
I'm
thank
guessing,
you so much.
But that's
I knew
the
you
way
would
I,
know the right answer.
I just feel that that's the way it is because I'm thinking about other recipes where you mm-hmm. where you use both as you described. You know, so
uh-huh.
it's 6 eggs plus 2 extra yolks.
Thank you so very much.
Sure.
Right. Well, let us know how it works out.
All
right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Robinson. This is line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Doyle, coincidentally, I was calling about ice cream. In the late 1940s in Saltillo, the city capital of Coahuila, Mexico, I was frequently served corn ice cream, which was quite custardy, as the last lady just said. And perhaps any of your Mexican listeners might let you know how it was made. I have no idea. It was in a pasteleria dessert place that I had it. It was delicious.
They are so clever with those odd flavors that you never believed in, and you can go to, there they are. Which one do you want? It's wild. I would guess my guess would be instead of a custard, it would be more like a sorbet, so that you don't make a custard and then freeze that custard. You make another mixture, because I think you'd want something light enough to keep that corn, as a top flavor.
Uh-huh.
And from my experience, most of those things were sort of like iced sorbets.
Well, you may be right. When I said custardy, I was thinking more of the sweetness and the smoothness
yes,
of it.
Yes, yes.
And in those days, they didn't have processors and Cuisinarts.
No, but they had metates what's the round one called?
Molcajete.
Molcajete.
Yeah.
And grind it up with that, sure.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks.
I think
for the
that would be it, because I was impressed at the sort of sherbet quality of the ice cream in Mexico.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we have about 5 minutes left.
Oh, my.
If somebody wants to give us a call, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, do you have some kind of recipe that's a departure from just your standard corn on the cob that you
Well, yes, I do. I brought one of my favorite books. This is a cook that I know. He has since died, Ronald Johnson, extraordinary American cook and poet. And he comes up with some very good old recipes that you sort of more than forgotten about, and I mean like almost colonial. And in fact, that's the name of this, is colonial corn pudding. And the secret is buttermilk, a corn. So it's 4 to 5 ears of fresh corn, 3 eggs, 1 cup of heavy cream, 3/4 of a cup of milk, and 1/4 of a cup of buttermilk, and 2 tablespoons of melted butter. And so you can see that would be very much like that idea of the flan. Scrape the corn from the cob and then get the milky juice. And you should have about 2 cups. Beat the eggs, add the cream, the milk, and the buttermilk, and add the corn and salt and pepper. And then it is baked in an 8 by 8 inch baking pan. And add the corn and dribble the rest of the butter on top. Then that is put into a bain-marie, a larger pot with about 1 inch of water, and baked for 1 hour or until the top of the pudding is golden. And I want to read you then his note about this. Just writing about this dish makes me long for it again. Surely is one of our best native dishes. In earlier times, it was an ordinary breakfast dish, rather more sweetened than need be, and is indeed pleasant to have some left over the next day, served at room temperature with crisp bacon. I like the extra flavor buttermilk yields here, but it can be prepared with any combination of cream and milk or with milk alone. And that's how romantic that he gets about the food. A colonial corn pudding. We'll have this typed up in case, so you didn't have to write everything down. Colonial corn pudding.
Very good.
Yeah, I like that one. I like this cook too.
Hmm. I think we're getting another caller here lined up.
Good.
And we should have time. Then they are on line number 1. And we're going to talk with somebody here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Hi. This is for the dog in Belgium.
little dog.
It's a small dog.
Yeah. And it's about eating corn fresh in the field. One time I thought I had raccoons, and I really had my Welsh corgi going out into the field, knocking down the stalk, walk down the stalk to the ear, husk the ear with her teeth, and then eat it raw.
I never have heard that. Now, I know a lot of dogs that like vegetables, and we've always been amazed at they'll eat parsley and they'll eat apples and they'll eat all kinds of things, but I would have never thought one would have deliberately gone to the cornfield and
with such technique.
Yes. They probably were watching the raccoons.
And if it had been any other size dog, I wouldn't have been amazed, but it was quite a feat.
That is interesting. And how often would it sort of be a real hunger or just a snack?
I think it was just a taste, a craving.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's good. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the story. Well, that's I know. I guess we're having talked to people that dogs could be vegetarians. So cats—they're obligate carnivores. They couldn't be, but I guess a dog really could. So,
do we have enough time?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Someone has just brought in a recipe. Just walked in the
door.
They
magically appear,
and it's for sweet corn ice cream. So here it is rather quickly. 4 cups of corn kernels, 2.5 cups of milk, 2 cups of heavy cream, 1/4 cup of granulated sugar, 9 egg yolks, 3/4 of a cup of brown sugar. Combine the kernels, the cream, and the sugar and boil it for 20 minutes and remove it and then discard the cobs. And then puree the mixture with an immersion blender, or as Emeril likes to call his motorboat. Let it steep for 30 minutes and then place it over medium-low heat. Then you put together the egg yolks and brown sugar and milk and whisk the eggs so they don't curdle and pour the yolk mixture back into that pot and stir it until it's thick. And then strain it. And refrigerate it for 4 hours, and then freeze in an ice cream maker. We'll have this. We'll have this also available. But well, there it is. There is a recipe for sweet corn ice cream. I'm amazed.
There you have it.
And I love it.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Remember, you heard it here.
All right. And if you want to drop us a line, we can send you that recipe, which came off the web from someplace. I think Martha Deal probably came up with that.
Yes. Yeah. I can't see where it's from. sfgate.com.
That's the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh, well, there
newspaper.
It is. Newspaper. That's it.
And we can send you that, and also we can send you the other recipe that Doyle mentioned. It's funny. We've talked about this before, and every time we get around to summer, I always say, I'm going to grill some corn on the grill, and I still haven't yet.
And then summer comes.
Summer comes and goes, and we have now at our house. We have had corn from the farmer's market now 2-3 times, and I guess we have always just done the most direct thing
and put it in,
boil it, and then that's it.
When is the Corn Festival? It's in August, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems it's right before school starts.
Yeah.
Which this year, I think, is around about August 24th.
That's about the time that it happens.
About the third week
of
August. Yeah.
That's why I wanted to psych people up for getting out to the Corn Festival.
Yeah.
And you can figure out how they cook it.
Yeah. And then there has been corn, at least for us at our farmer's market, there has been corn. Mrs. Inge has come home with some. And one of the things, because, earlier caller talked about how bad where she is, that they just haven't had it.
There
are some parts of the state have been very, very dry this summer. And I guess I found myself wondering where exactly this corn had come from, whether it had come from someplace else, whether they had just been lucky enough that they got the rain so that they could actually have something to sell. And I'm not really sure where it had come from.
An awful lot of corn from the field came from Hoopston because they had the corn plant.
Oh, they had the plant,
plant, yeah. And so maybe they had enough rain up there.
Well, I think we're about the point where we'll wrap it up for this time around and say that next month, which would be September.
September.
Noel will come back. What should we do then? I know.
Gee, Marty, I don't know.
Something will happen. You're the man who used to jazz me about how angels had to come down with a neon sign out of heaven flashing the subject. And so now I just wait for the man to call.
He calls
a few days before and says, well, this is what we're going to do.
It generally is an experience or a thought or something that all of a sudden makes it relevant. I try not to imitate what we have done before, but as I said, there are only 12 months, and corn has to be one of them.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed today very much. I've learned. I think when they redo the studios, there should be a little kitchen stove right over here. I would like to try that corn sauce with basil on scallops. Can you believe that?
That sounds like it'd probably be pretty good. All right. Well, I thank the callers. I thank you. Doyle Moore is the man we like to call our chef in residence. First Wednesday of the month, he's here. We talk about cooking. And I'll be back next month.
Thank you.
The show here, Focus 580, is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards and gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, the Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Buzz Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, and Any Frequency Music Store. They're all housed in West Washington Street in Monticello. The broadcast is also made possible today with support from Orange Taxi. It's a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Their number is 367-8888. A little later today, as part of the afternoon magazine, you will hear a conversation about American women in the Catholic Church who are pushing for reform. The guest for the program, journalist Angela Bonavoglia, she's the author of the book Good Catholic Girls, How Women Are Leading the Fight to Change the Church. It is also in part a memoir of her return to the church, and she'll be talking with Celeste Quinn in the 1 o'clock hour of the afternoon magazine today. The show itself gets underway at noon with the usual mix of news and weather and sports and other things. As I say, Celeste Quinn, she is the host for that program. Coming up in the next hour of this show, we'll be talking with Dr. Peter Kramer. He is a psychiatrist and probably will be best known for a book that he authored, came out now more than 10 years ago, a book titled Listening to Prozac, which at the time helped, I think, ignite a lot of debate and conversation about the use of antidepressant medications. And as a result of that book coming out, he became well-known as a commentator on, expert on depression. Well, he has a new book out that explores depression, its causes, how we think about it. It's titled Against Depression, and he'll be talking with us about the book in the next hour of the show. We're going to take a break here, as we usually do. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour. Before that, an update on the markets, so please stay tuned.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
On the Chicago Board of Trade at this hour, September wheat at